This is Galesburg's Evening News on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. Glad you're with us on a Friday night. She's been in the area for various reasons the past couple of days, and Congresswoman Sherry Boosdoos is kind enough to come talk to us for a few minutes while she is in the area. Congresswoman, thanks for coming in.
You bet. Thank you.
I won't spend a lot of time on this, but a couple of days ago, we talked to a candidate for your seat on the Republican side. Are you concerned about having an opponent at all this early in the game?
Well, you know, hey, we live in a democracy. I happen to be a member of Congress, which means I have to run every 2 years. I think when you look at this, my job is to make sure that I'm working as hard as I possibly can, getting results, listening to people, and I hope that when the election comes around, the folks that I'm lucky enough to serve will believe that about me.
I've probably said a million times, regardless of who's running, the thing that gets me about being in the House is that it's a 2-year term, and about the time you're just getting your seat warmed at your desk, you have to think about running again. That's got to be frustrating and distracting from trying to get anything done.
Well, I guess it's all how you look at it.
Yeah.
We can thank our founding fathers for that. It does happen to be in the Constitution. And so basically every 2 years there's a referendum on how I'm doing. And I believe that if I'm doing a good job, then the voters hopefully will say, okay, I think she deserves a little more time out there. And if I'm not, then that's their decision as well. But, you know, look, I look at this as I'm lucky to be a public servant. I'm lucky enough that the folks of our congressional district have sent me out to Congress since 2012, and I'm now in my fourth term. I believe that I'm in the best position I've ever been in because I'm still on the Ag Committee, which mm-hmm. I'm in a position to be a voice from the Midwest and make sure I'm doing everything I can to fight for our family farmers who are hurting right now. And this term, I'm also on the Appropriations Committee. So in the subcommittees I serve on, literally 75% of the federal budget go through those subcommittees that are actually, if you look at the number of members on those, are very small committees. And I feel fortunate that I have a seat at the table, being from the Midwest, being from a mostly rural district. And that's fairly unusual for a Democrat to come from, downstate Illinois. In fact, in the Illinois congressional delegation, there are 18 members and there's only one Democrat from downstate Illinois. So I feel fortunate to be in this job, and hopefully I'll show people that I'm doing the best I possibly can.
You mentioned agriculture. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, you were in Monmouth today at OSF Holy Family Medical Center talking about health care. What was your purpose there and what did you hear?
Well, rural health care, I just mentioned our family farmers are in hurting and are going through some tough times right now. So rural health care is also going through some tough times right now. And, when we were there, they've got they're licensed for 23 beds. And there was one patient there today, an inpatient. So what's happening in rural hospitals, it's evolving to less inpatients, fewer inpatients, and more of the emergency room visits. And they're having to utilize things like telemedicine now, which relies on things like rural broadband. So, like, there's all these different issues that are intertwined. Making the numbers work in rural healthcare is very, very difficult. So, as a someone who serves in the federal government, we need to make sure that the bills that we pass do right by rural healthcare, because we cannot afford for our rural hospitals in smaller towns to close. So, We talked a lot about policy and how they're serving their patients in Monmouth, and I walk away with understanding what I need to do when I go back out to Washington.
Even if if something were to happen to Holy Family in Monmouth, there's two hospitals here in Galesburg, and there's others around the area that surrounds Monmouth. Do we have too many hospitals?
No, we do not have too many hospitals. In fact, what would happen is we've got areas like that you can call like a food desert.
Yeah.
For instance, there's places in Peoria where you've got to go way too far to even find a grocery store. Well, what we would get to if our hospitals began closing is we would have healthcare deserts. And I see it as a big part of my job when we've got 85% of our towns in this congressional district are 5,000 people or fewer. So we've already seen hospitals take away their baby units. You know, you've got to drive farther to deliver a baby now. That is not good. We want to make sure that the numbers work. And the Affordable Care Act, while it has had flaws, it also, we know that it has led to 22 million additional Americans having health insurance. So while many of us look at healthcare in different lights, I worked in healthcare for a decade before I went to Congress. I understand what it takes to make sure that the numbers work, and that's partially what I was there and to hear about today.
On the other hand, rural broadband, something that's been in the news here this week, because I think Governor Pritzker is, I think, either signed or is encouraging legislation helping more farms, ironically, get some of that rural broadband access because the technology on the farm itself is changing. So it seems to me that I guess you take the good and you take the bad with things like that, don't you?
Well, it's a very expensive proposition to make sure that if you live in a small town that you have access to high-speed internet. It's also critical for rural living. I mean, if you think about if someone's going to move to a community, you know, they check out things like how are the local schools? Where are the local hospitals? Can I sign up for high-speed internet? And if the answer is, well, all of these schools have consolidated and now you've got to go pretty far to head to the school. Oh, and by the way, you cannot deliver your next baby that you want to have because our obstetrics unit closed at our hospital. You've got to go to the local library in order to have access to the internet. Those things are all areas where, the federal government's not the answer to everything, but to have good policy, that's got to be part of it. And our small town communities need to have all of that to make sure that we have families who want to move in and have vibrant communities.
We could probably talk about this all day, but time is short, so I wanted to get to the other issue. And you've been discussing agriculture a lot lately. We aired your comments last week that you had at the state fair with RFD Illinois on that issue. What are some of the concerns in that area right now? I see climate change is maybe one of those that is maybe affecting farming, the trade wars, all that stuff.
There is a lot. We are in the middle of a trade war with our biggest agricultural trading partners. There were more tariffs that were announced just today. And here's the thing. China's a bad actor when it comes to trade, okay? They steal our intellectual property. And they have been doing this for many, many years. They have been labeled a currency manipulator. So I'm not saying that we've got to just trade blindly with China. But this trade war is being waged on the back of our family farmers. And what will happen if the president doesn't make a decision to end this is that this could have generational after effects. You know, China has no problem turning to places like Brazil and Argentina to trade with. We've got while our yields, I think, are going to be down in many areas on corn and beans. I just left a farmer close by. He said he thinks his yields could even be better this session. So we've got to end the trade war. Secondly, the administration, the Trump administration, is passing out these small refinery waivers. Think what they're called, small refinery waivers. They are giving them out to these multi-billion-dollar huge oil companies that is costing us billions of gallons of ethanol from being sold. Again, that is totally within the discretion of the Trump administration to take care of that. And then lastly, you'd mentioned the climate. We're at the mercy, right, of Mother Nature. All of us are. Mm-hmm. And we clearly there are some changes going on. And so when climate is discussed, I want to make sure that folks who happen to be on the coast look at us as part of the solution, not as part of the problem. I don't want fingers being pointed at our family farmers, but rather, ethanol is good for the environment. Mm-hmm. We can be part of the carbon capture in a positive way. So we introduced what we called the Rural Green Partnership as a way to saying, okay, rural America, you are part of the solution. We want you to have a seat at the table to discuss this. And if anybody wants to see this, I'm not selling anything, but if anybody wants to read our proposal on this, it's just at boostos.house.gov. and our proposals out there. I welcome anybody's feedback. I see this as kind of an ever-evolving document.
It's a it's something that's quite detailed, so we will link to that as well on WGIL.com. But I'm curious, why is it that the issue of climate change is so divisive? I'm so confused. And yeah, I know, I realize I'm saying this on a station that airs Rush Limbaugh, but I don't understand. It seems pretty clear to me that something is happening, but yet there are so many people that don't want to acknowledge it, or don't want to acknowledge it to the extent that it might be happening. Why is this so divisive?
You know, look, I was not a great science student by any means. You know, I mean,
that's why I do this for a living, and
that's why I was a journalist for 20 years, and then and then worked in healthcare administration. But but the science is out there, all right, And I don't like to over politicize anything, but I think anybody who's a family farmer, my front yard is the Mississippi River, and we have these 100-year floods every 3, 4, 5 years now, and so clearly the science backs up that there's change that is going on in our climate. We have created what's called the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis to take a look at what's out there and what do we need to do from a legislative perspective. I don't want to put my thumb on anybody when it comes to legislation, other than to say that family farmers, we want you to be included as part of this conversation. That is why I submitted this Rural Green Partnership to this select committee. They've accepted this, and they have agreed to say, yes, we want this as part of our overall investigation when we come up with legislative answers to what's going on in our world, actually.
One more quick question about news that came up today in regards to the situation with China. The president is also, well, I think the word was directing, but I don't think he can really direct some of these shippers like UPS and FedEx or whatever to identify packages being shipped from China that may contain opioids or fentanyl and things like that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we have a crisis as it pertains to opioids, and there's a lot of fronts that we have to address. The physicians who are over prescribing these, the pharmacies, the pharmaceutical companies that have overproduced these, and so there's a whole lot of investigation that needs to go on, and then also what is being shipped in from China. It's a real problem, And I don't know exactly what the president or what the administration is proposing on this, but he is absolutely right that this is a problem. What's coming in from China, we need to take a look at it, and we need to put a stop to it.
What other things would you propose in terms of trying to curb the opioid crisis?
Well, it's also treatment, and you can't treat people who have an addiction problem as criminals. We need to treat this as an addiction. I have known people in our own community who have overdosed on opioids, and I've talked with many families who have gone through this, and there's not enough treatment centers, there's not enough treatment programs, but there have been some very good examples of law enforcement who have made a decision to treat overdoses, people who have overdosed with the Narcan so they can they can survive. And then to treat those folks as addicts as opposed to criminals. And I applaud the law enforcement agencies who have decided to do that.
Congresswoman Sherry Bustos, good to talk to you as always. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, Will.
Stay tuned. Galesburg's Evening News continues next on WGIL.